You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Big news from the Los Angeles Dodgers, and that is that Clayton Kershaw has gone on the disabled list for right now, which is an undetermined amount of time. I'm Allison Switter from MLB.com. As we look at the West teams, obviously the Giants continue to have the advantage, even more probably with the Dodgers having this recent news about Kershaw. So let's talk about that and see what's happening around the rest of the division. A little news out of Dodgers camp that kind of shook the baseball world in a little bit. So let's talk about that. I'm Allison Footer here with Ken Gernick. Ken, okay, so Clayton Kershaw has gone on the disabled list, which is, bad news for not only the Dodgers, but for just for baseball fans who like watching the guy pitch. So tell us what's going on with that and the treatment he receives and what we might be looking at here.
Well, he went on the disabled list with lower back pain. The Dodgers tend not to give specific diagnoses. So we're left to kind of guess as far as how serious it is. It was serious enough that he took an epidural injection and that he's on a DL. So serious enough for a guy who's only been disabled once in his career in the big leagues. While they're hopeful that it'll only be 15 days, usually with epidurals, it tends to be longer because they're usually used for disc pressing on nerves. So that's all speculation, but it's no speculation about the fact that he's been pitching in pain and that he's now not pitching. And the longer he's out, the longer it'll take for him to rebuild his arm strength so that he can pitch deep in the game. So while the optimistic hope is that he's back after the All-Star break, who knows? It could be longer than that.
Yeah, the Dodgers have the equivalent of a starting rotation on the disabled list, which is very disconcerting. I'm stating the obvious here that the rotation is having some issues, just trying to fill it and stay healthy. How does this affect the rotation? Does this mean Arias, who we've talked about on this podcast, is kind of reaching that innings limit? Does this make them maybe want to push him a little longer and keep him around? How does the rest of this rotation shake out?
Yeah, as far as Julio goes, the plan, if everything went well, was to give him a few starts here, to shut him down, and bring him back at the end of the year. They haven't said it specifically, but it looks like they've scrapped that plan, and now they're going to probably use up all the innings. They haven't told us how many, but it's probably going to be about 120. We use them all now, and they get them as deep as they can, and hope that either McCarthy or Ryu are back sometime after the All-Star break. But the Dodgers, unfortunately, right now, because they've had so many pitching injuries, their strategy now is basically hope. Which is never a great strategy, but that's all they got. They're hoping that these injured guys come back, but they've been hurt for so long, and so many of them have been hurt, that they just don't grow on trees, and they've run through so many of them. Like you said, they've got pretty much a whole rotation on the table.
So as far as, like, those horses, I'm not horses, because they don't really have those, but the innings eaters, Scott Kazmir, do they need some of the veteran guys to step up and really, hang in there and pitch deep in the games? Because this is not only – is it rough for the rotation, but it also can really have an effect on the bullpen if they have to start piling up too many innings.
Well, of course, that's true, but you're trying to win games. So if a guy's struggling, you don't leave him out with eight innings. Although that's kind of what they wound up doing last night with Brock Stewart in his major league debut. We had a five-run second inning. He batted twice because they kind of had no choice. And they knew that they were kind of scrambling Friday with Kershaw very unlikely to get that start. So, really, it's a day-to-day, fire drill here. And that's certainly not what the Dodgers have become known for as far as pitching, but they're in crisis mode here. It's really been an epidemic, and, no team really has the kind of depth to survive what they've had to go through. You could criticize them maybe for signing a bunch of players that have a history of breaking down, but, whether you criticize them or not, the fact remains they're in crisis, and they don't have a lot of options to pull out of it.
Chris, let's get started on, first of all, just some Giants. First of all, they're 49-31 as we're recording this. They are comfortably in first place, even with a couple of losses, very strange losses recently. But I liked this story. So Madison Bumgarner is when the Giants are playing in Oakland, he is going to be hitting for himself. They are not going to use a designated hitter. This will be the first time since 1976 that an NL team has allowed to, or that a team has started somebody else and not using the designated hitter. So obviously, Madison Bumgarner likes to hit. Whose decision was this, Madison or Bruce Bochy's?
It's ultimately Bruce Bochy's, Allison, but Madison, of course, is wholeheartedly behind it. He's the kind of guy who likes to get things done himself, and he likes to swing the bat. And so, combination of those two, wanting to be, he wants to be a complete player. He loves hitting. He's sturdy enough physically, so as to not hurt himself, at the plate. Literally hurt himself physically. He can handle himself up there, and so he's going to take his cuts.
Yeah, I mean, it should be noted he has a 175 batting average, which is not as good as a lot of other batting averages by National League pitchers. But he does have 13 career home runs, so I guess this is. Are there any? What do you think? Do you think this is a good idea?
Well, I think it's a great idea.
Okay.
I mean, why baby these guys? I mean, some guys can't handle it. But Madison, I think a lot of us have seen the that commercial he did where he chops down the tree, using the same stroke he uses as a right-handed batter. So, again, he's a big, sturdy guy. If anybody can handle it, it's him.
Yeah, I just you just wonder if there's a disadvantage just from a winning standpoint. But, okay.
I don't think he should participate in the home run derby, and I don't think in the pitcher's home run derby kind of makes no sense. I think something like that he should kind of abstain from, because you really could, pull an oblique or something like that, trying to hit for, distance, 20, 30 straight swings. That might not be real wise.
Yeah, what's the latest on that? I've kind of fallen out of that, following along with that story. Is there going to be something?
Yeah, I think it's still alive, and it'll be something that probably gets raised again about this time next week when they pick the All-Star teams, but right now it's kind of dormant.
Okay, I'm with you. I hope it stays that way.
Thankfully, right, yeah.
Yeah, it's gimmicky, and there's so much risk involved, and I don't think it's not like they're trying to, it's not like they desperately need something to get people excited about that day, and
sure.
Yeah, I just don't think it's a good idea. Okay, so Joe Panic, this kind of alarmed me. I'm very sensitive to the whole concussion thing. I like what baseball has done and being more cognizant of making sure that they're paying attention to stuff. So it seemed like he was experiencing some symptoms, right? I mean, he went on the concussion list, but he was showing some sort of residual effects from an incident from days earlier, right?
Well, not the only effect he was showing was an increase in his batting average. That's what was odd. Joe had a great road trip. He was, swinging well when they came back too. And it's funny, I talked to him minutes before they announced that he was, checking him again because, or that he had been scratched because of concussion symptoms. I was talking to him about a feature I wanted to work on, and he was on his way out to batting practice. He had his cap on, he had his bat, and he had his glove. And so I'm wondering what happened. Did he start having did the symptoms recur as he was walking from the clubhouse to the bench? To the dugout or whatever. My gosh, I mean, this stuff is insidious. So, it was kind of interesting that Bruce, in telling us, while informing us that Joe had been scratched, Bruce Bochy, the Giants manager, seemed really shaken up. And not like I had seen him, certainly out of sorts he was. And, so I think it definitely bothered him that Joe had been stricken like this. So, hopefully he takes the 7 days and rests and collects everything, and we'll be back better than ever when he returns.
Yeah, it is really scary when you're talking about that stuff. Especially like you said, it wasn't like it was affecting his play. It was obviously affecting something just in his daily life, which is just really, really scary. Okay, so who replaces him? And I guess that'll be a temporary thing, but who's going to play in his place?
Well, that's a heck of a question, Allison, because last night Ramiro Pena got hurt, his replacement. And so what are they going to do now? That'll be news for today, news for a couple hours from now when they report to Oakland.
So they traded Fernando Rodney, and smartly, because, I mean, how much do you need a closer when you're not winning a whole lot of games? But they got back a pitcher that they made a trade with the Marlins. They got back a pitcher that A.J. Preller seems to think is a future middle-of-the-rotation starter. So what can you tell us about him?
Well, I mean, he's been unbelievable this year. If you look at his Fernando Rodney's numbers at the major league level, just take those numbers and kind of apply them to Chris Paddock at the minor league level. He's allowed, I think, 9 hits and 2 walks over 28 innings. So his WHIP is something around 0.4. His ERA, he's allowed, I think, 3 earned runs and 6 starts. So I think this year he's boosted his stock a lot. It sounds like Preller kind of viewed him as the best pitching prospect or one of the best pitching prospects in the Marlins system. Obviously, like you said, the idea of trading Fernando Rodney, that's kind of one of the more obvious trade possibilities. I didn't necessarily see it coming this fast, but you don't necessarily need a closer when your closers are luxuries. Closers are luxuries for teams that are competing for the playoffs, and right now the Padres aren't. So I think that trade was coming, and Preller said he fielded calls from about 10 different teams. So, I guess he liked the Marlins offer the best. If you look at Paddock's stats so far, you can kind of see why.
Yeah, so we should mention Chris Paddock is 20 years old and at Class A, 6 starts. He allowed 3 earned runs and a .95 ERA, which is basically like equal to not having the ERA. I mean, you can't really – I guess he had to also weigh like when he wanted this whatever player they obtained to really be ready to help the Major League team. I'm sure that they have a vision of exactly – I know they have a vision. I don't know if they have like a concrete plan for exactly like when they see themselves being competitive on the major league level. But the one thing you have to be careful of, I guess, Ray, is to not get somebody who might be ready too early, which sounds kind of weird, but it's going to take them a while to put this whole thing together. So somebody who might be ready 2 or 3 years down the road, I guess, is sort of what they're looking for at this point, right?
Yeah. And I think the one thing they were really looking for was pitching. Pitching depth in their minor leagues, because they have some pretty good hitting prospects that are almost that are all kind of on the brink of breaking through at the major league level, but the depth of pitching in their minor league system isn't quite up to the depth of their hitting. So that's kind of what Paddock brings, and obviously he's probably not going to arrive maybe till 2019, but you know what, they're building for the future, and that's kind of that. We saw that with the James Shields trade earlier when they got Fernando Tatis Jr. 17. Well, he's not going to help for another 5 years, but basically what they're doing is they're taking these veterans who are kind of luxuries at this point and trying to turn them into pieces in their minor league system.
Okay, so they do need a closer for, you know, some purposes. So who takes over that role?
Well, right now it looks like Ryan Buchter, and he's kind of been one of the more fun, interesting stories on the Padres this season. His ERA is something around 2.9. I can only remember one time this season where he gave up runs in a key situation. He's kind of – I think his ERA might not even – it probably deserves to be better than it is. He gave up a few runs on Wednesday when he was in kind of a mop-up duty because he hasn't pitched in a while. But he's really interesting because a lot of teams passed on him. He was in the Braves system, he was in the Dodgers system, and they kind of didn't really give him a chance. And he's one of those guys, you'll see it in the NBA a lot, but he plays with a chip on his shoulder. He kind of wants to prove those teams wrong, and he'll tell you that. And I think the reason most teams passed on him is because he was a one-pitch pitcher. He throws a fastball, and a fastball is not especially – it's pretty much league average velocity-wise, but he locates it perfectly, and he has a high spin rate on it. So guys don't pick it up very well, and he gets a lot of swings and misses. He has the right mentality to be a closer because he really never wants to give in on the mound. So I think it'll be interesting to see. He's certainly earned it with what he's done this season. And he's a fun guy to watch.
So Will Myers had a really good June. So he had 327 On base percentage, .429, slugging .765. I mean, just a great, great June, which is good for a few reasons. But one, it's because, I mean, he's probably going to be the Padres All-Star. And the Padres are hosting this game, so they really wanted to have, like, a legit guy, right? I mean, there's years where a team is really scuffling. They don't have, like, an obvious All-Star, and it'll be like somebody makes it because every team has to be representative. It's nice to see, like, the Padres have, now that Fernando Rodney's been traded, I mean, this is probably their All-Star, right?
Yeah, and there's a small case you can make for Drew Pomeranz. I think maybe he pitches well tomorrow. He could get some consideration. But without Fernando Rodney in the mix, and I think Rodney is an All-Star. He'll probably be an All-Star for the Marlins now. Without Rodney in the mix, Myers is as much of a lock as you'll see, which is kind of exactly what the Padres wanted. He's young. He could be the face of the franchise for a few years to come. I know I've talked to Will a few times. He wants to participate in the Home Run Derby like desperately. So he wants to kind of be the Padres' face during All-Star Week, and he's earned it with what he did in June, because what he did in June was it ranks right among the best months in Padres history. I kind of broke it down the other day and had it as the best month in 15 years. It was really that good. His 11 home runs were a Padres franchise record for June. So, coming into this month, it really wasn't like that for him, but he's just taken off, and it looks like he'll be in the All-Star game.
Some news that was a bummer, John Jay. So he fractured his right forearm. He's going to be out a month. I guess it took them a while to come to that conclusion, because he's actually suffered this hit, being hit by a pitch a couple of weeks ago. But to just determine that it was indeed a fracture, this is really bad for a couple of reasons. Number one, he was one of the more productive players. Number two, he's also one of the bigger trade chips that they have, right? So that kind of muddies the waters a little bit.
Yeah, he might have been the biggest trade chip because, I mean, it, just in terms of a guy on the last year of his contract, because he's been such a consistent performer this season. He does everything well. He hits righties, he hits lefties, he plays good defense. He can run a little bit. So I think there would be probably 6 or 7 teams lining up for a guy like that are in contention right now, a center fielder. And it definitely hurts the Padres because the timing of the injury is what's the worst. If it had happened 3 weeks ago, then maybe he'd be back with a couple weeks before the deadline and be able to show off that he's healthy and feeling fine. But right now it looks like he'll come back right around the trade deadline. And obviously part of what factors into it for why it's so disappointing is that he's performed well for the Padres. But I think in the broader picture, it's just the fact that who knows what they'll be able to get for him. Who knows if he'll be back in time if they decide to trade him before August 1st.
Okay, they're only a few games better than the Padres. As we're recording this, they're 36-45. It seemed like, they put together a nice little winning streak there, and then they got swept by the Phillies. And then they lost 2-3 to the Rockies. That has to be... very frustrating from an organizational standpoint to see a little bit of maybe a softer part of the schedule that doesn't go right.
Yeah, Allison, this last road trip, 10-game road trip, they won 7 of the first 8 games and were 7-1. And there was a lot of optimism that maybe they'd finally kind of turned the corner, and Shelby Miller had a really good outing, during that stretch. And it seemed like things were maybe finally starting to come together for them. And then they lost the final 2 games in Denver. One of those games Shelby did not pitch well in. And then they lost 3 straight to the Phillies. So all of a sudden they went from 7-1, this is going to be a great road trip, to they've lost 5 straight, and now they're 9 games under .500 at the actual midpoint of the season. So certainly a lot of frustration, a lot of head-scratching going on over at Chase Field as they try to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, because they're really struggling to win at home, right? I mean, I haven't been, like, counting each home win,
yeah,
but it's still a place
dominate. Yeah, they've got the second worst home record in baseball. Only the Braves are worse, and that's another thing that they just – it's really kind of inexplicable how they could be, you know, quite that bad at home, and something that they just consistently cannot seem to get anything together at home. And again, I'm at a loss. I know I sound like I'm kind of at a loss here, but it's hard to explain how a team can really struggle that badly at home.
Yeah, it's a mystery because it shouldn't be that much easier for a visiting team to be comfortable there. I don't know. I mean, sometimes mean, a lot of teams that have been successful have, like, kind of configured their team to fit their dimensions and things like that. I mean, there's been all kinds of things that you've heard over the years of just putting a, you know, fielding a team that, for whatever reason, meld well with their home field. But I'm getting off on a tangent. Let's move.
I mean, you know, they're 13 and 28, and it's hard to just imagine how that could possibly be. I mean, you know, the only team worse at this moment is the Braves, who are 11 and 32. So they have by far the most home losses. It's hard to explain.
Yeah, the Braves are supposed to be bad. The Diamondbacks are not. That's what makes it so baffling. But so on to even better news. Let's talk about Zach Greinke, who is, I was being sarcastic about that, left oblique tightness. Oblique is one of those injuries. If it's a strain, you really have to just leave it alone for a very, very long time and let it heal. There's no other way to do it. This is tightness. Maybe there's a little bit of reason to be optimistic on that. They'll determine whether or not he's going to go on the DL in another day or so. 8-1 since May 1st with a 2.64 ERA. So this is obviously not, I mean, if they lose him for any amount of time, that's tough. How will that affect the rest of the rotation?
Yeah, again, that's a real blow because he had won seven straight starts and really should have won eight straight. The bullpen coughed up a lead he had in Denver. They ended up eventually winning the game. But still, he's been pitching really well, and to lose him would certainly be a tremendous blow for them. They're going to have to try to patch it together. Maybe a guy like Zach Godley, who pitched well at times up here, would get a chance. And Zach, no disrespect to Zach, he's done a nice job, but he's no, Zach Greinke. So that would certainly, again, be another step backwards for him in terms of a key injury, just like the A.J. Pollock injury to start the year, and just like David Peralta, who's had two different stints on the DL and missed a lot of time, and Chris Owings has been out. So the injuries are starting to kind of pile up for them as well.
Yeah, has Greinke had any kind of history with any kind of injuries like this? He seems to be a guy that's been mostly healthy, right?
Yeah, and so, again, this was something that was unexpected. He went out and, you know, he thinks he did it on a swing. He got a base hit, but he thinks that he may have initially tweaked it on a swing the other night and then went out to warm up next inning and just couldn't get comfortable. And again, as you mentioned, this, the oblique and the, you know, the rib cage area, anytime you have an issue there, you want to be extra cautious, because if you really do kind of tear something in there, it could be a month long thing. So they're going to err on the side of caution, and it wouldn't surprise me to see him on the DL later this week.
Okay. They're 37 and 41 as we're recording this. They're in third place. They're ahead of the Diamondbacks and the Padres, but they're 11 back from the Giants. So, I was reading some of the coverage recently, and they were, they had a good June, but they're just still seem to be dissatisfied. So what are some of the things that they're dissatisfied with?
Well, they had a big homestand that just ended, seven games, and they went 3-4, and they're still a game under 500 at home, and that's what they're dissatisfied with. And that homestand was like the very worst of Coors Field that you could imagine. I think there were over, in the first six games, there were over 100 runs scored by the two teams. Close to a normal baseball game, the final score was 9-5 for those six games. So you could imagine what they did to the bullpen. Imagine what it did injury-wise. I mean, by the end of it, DJ LeMahieu and Trevor Story were hurt, and Ryan Rayburn was hit. They were having trouble getting through games. That's been an issue. If they're able to get more consistent starting pitching, those games become blowouts instead of 9-7 games where you're using everybody in the bullpen because you're trying to win it. And that's why it was such a draining homestand, and that's why they weren't very happy with the final performance, the final record, and just the fatigue factor of what they did to themselves.
Yeah. So what is going on with Trevor Story with that little injury? Was that going to be anything problematic?
Yeah, Trevor Story was hit by a pitch on Sunday afternoon, came back a couple of games later, but late in that game on his fourth at-bat, he hit one off the end of the bat and the finger started buzzing again. So what they're hoping is by the weekend series with the Dodgers, having 2 days off because he didn't play the last game at home, they're just hoping that gets him back and ready to play. It's not a disabled list type injury, but it's the type of thing where if you keep playing with it, when you're hurting, then you can hurt it a lot worse.